Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
I'm Austin Powers. I like
Gas Mojo.
The very sexy, very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby, yeah!
What a gas, baby, yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it, so you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net engine booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it. And this is Blue Otter. We are live with Sir Mark Amaru Pinkham. And we've also got my trusty sidekick, Mark Borchardine, the Badger. And we've got Jeremiah Marriott, who's a friend of Mark Pinkham's. Well, welcome, Sir Mark. How are you this evening?
I'm great, Blue Water. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. It's been a few years since we got together online, and I see your movement's grown, and I guess the last time I spoke with you, I guess you were in Flagstaff, so what have you been up to for the last? This is your show. You know, talk about whatever you want to talk about. I'm sure it's going to be fascinating, and because I know you've got access to hidden histories that I know I'm fascinated with the subject. And
right.
So just take us on a trip.
Well, Blue Water, you you sent me a message about the Peacock Angel and how your name by numerology has a connection to the Peacock Angel. Well, the Peacock Angel has been a major part of what I've been up to the last few years. I have both been communing with this being, this entity, this interdimensional being, as well as working to save his people called the Yazidis, who live in northern Iraq. And they are one of the most malign people on the planet. They've had probably 20 million of their people have been murdered since the dawn of Islam, because the Muslims tend to think of their deity, the Peacock Angel, as Satan. And they are actually schooled. They are told in school that the more Yazidis you knock off, the better it is for you in the next world. And there'll be 72 virgins for you and so forth and so on. I mean, this is literal. This is what they teach in the schools.
Well, let me ask you a quick question.
So, consequently, the Yazidis always have to watch their back. The Yazidis reside in Kurdistan, which is basically run by Muslim Kurds, and they do not have a voice in the national parliament. You're supposed to get one representative for every 100,000 people, and so they conceivably they should have five or six representatives. But they only have one. They don't get the food and water, international food and water relief that's supposed to come to them. They do not get normally, and they're constantly getting kidnapped and murdered. So I started. Do you want me to tell you this whole story I have of the Peacock Angel and my connection?
I wanted to ask you a quick question. I remember in history, the Shah of Iran, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, sat on the peacock throne. And if there is a correlation, I know that's in the area. I mean, maybe you might want to. I mean, did he usurp that? Or anyway, just go ahead. Tell us the story.
Well, he did usurp that. It was actually in India, and it was stolen and taken into Persia. The original king of the world, which is a concept that people in the East are very acquainted with and is completely foreign to us here in the West, the concept of the king of the world ruling this planet as a being that came here thousands, perhaps millions of years ago with an entourage and set up a palace, a castle, and proceeded to rule the entire planet and continues to rule it, on another dimension, this was, this being is known by the Yazidis as the Peacock Angel, or Melek Taus is one of his names, Melek meaning king peacock. The Hindus and the Tamil people know him as Sanat Kumara. Sanat Kumara is this youngish looking boy that rides on a peacock. And Sanat Kumara is a name that's well-known amongst the Ascended Master tradition, because Sanat Kumara is the founder of that tradition, the founder of the Great White Brotherhood. Not only was the original king of the world, but he was also the first to bring the knowledge, the wisdom about alchemy, kundalini, basically the information and wisdom about human evolution on this planet. So this is why Sanat Kumara, or also known as Murugan or Kartikeya or the Peacock Angel, he's all in all these different traditions, he's known as the Savior, because he brought this wisdom to us. So the original throne of this world was indeed a peacock throne, and it was occupied by the Peacock Angel, the Peacock King. Well, you know, my experience with the Peacock Angel started, I would say 10, 15 years ago, when I was doing an apprenticeship with a shaman down in Peru. And this particular shaman was a San Pedro shaman. He mixed up San Pedro cactus, which he called huachuma, made it into a drink and drank it down, and then it would expand his consciousness and give you all kinds of, you know, visuals, take you into other dimensions and so forth and so on. And so I'd done quite a bit of this over the course of 3 years. And at this one time, we were about 13,000 feet high up in this totally idyllic setting. And we were surrounded by snow-capped mountains, and in the center was this, you know, this natural hot springs pool. And so he passed to me the drink, and the first thing I noticed when I looked at it was as thick as mud. I mean, having been involved with this tradition as long as I had, I knew the thicker it was, the stronger it was. So,
well,
I hesitated before I drank it down. Which, for another reason as well, is because the taste was pretty important. But I mainly hesitated because I knew what the strength of it was going to be. And my shaman was a smallish guy, rather stocky, but he had a very deep voice. And immediately he's like, "Drink it out," and that shook me up so much. I just drank it right down. And before I knew it, I was in another dimension, totally. And I was surrounded by thousands, perhaps millions of eyes. And the only way I can explain is it seemed like all the forms of nature opened their eyes at the same time. So there's all these millions of eyes, and they seemed to be looking right straight at me. And, of course, my thought was, well, is this one being with a million eyes, or is this a million beings that are looking at me? So anyway, as you can imagine, it was pretty intimidating. But the more I looked at the eyes, I realized that they're not the normal human eyes, but they're actually the eyes that you see on peacock feathers. And as I studied them more, I realized they actually were on peacock feathers. And then you would have groupings of peacock feathers that would come together as peacocks. And then you would have bigger peacocks and bigger peacocks. And then I looked around, and all the mountains around me had turned into these gigantic, humongous peacocks. And the only way,
wow.
The only thing I can say is, I'm in the land of the peacock.
Wow.
What happens now, right? I had no idea what I was experiencing at the time. None whatsoever. I had heard, since I had been involved with yoga and meditation and lived in India, that Mordigan Sanat Kumara was associated with the peacocks. I thought, well, maybe this in some way has to do with him, related to him and an experience with him, but I still really didn't know. And so this is the way it was for the rest of the day, and I had to watch where I was walking because, I mean, even the grass under me was peacock feathers. Everywhere I was walking was peacock. And so I was in this state for the rest of the day. Well, that certainly wasn't the end of it, and I've been in and out of that state off and on ever since. But when I did finish the experience and I came back home, I immediately started searching around for an explanation. Well, what really is this that I experienced? And I searched here and there, and the only people on the planet that seemed to know anything about it were these Yazidis. And what the Yazidis say is that millions of years ago, the greatest of the angels was sent here in order to give the planet life and color, and this was the peacock angel. So as it came down to the earth, it took the form of this incredible peacock because it had the seven colors. And by being the peacock, he could then bestow upon our earth all the seven different colors. So they say that he landed in a place that's now in northern Iraq called Lalish. That's their most sacred place, and that's their temple city today. And they say that's where the original Garden of Eden was. Well, there's more than one Garden of Eden, but that's where one of them was. So he landed there, and then it said that he spread his peacock feathers all around the planet, like this gigantic embrace, and virtually covered the whole entire planet with peacock feathers.
Hmm.
Well, apparently this is what I saw. Apparently these feathers are still there, but they're just in another dimension. And one of the names of the peacock angel is the Green Man. So apparently what happened was that these peacock feathers were more etheric initially, And as they condensed and densified, they became all the forms of nature. And that's the experience you have. When you see these eyes and you see these feathers, it's like all the forms of nature have opened their eyes. It's these eyes and these feathers are connected to nature. And it's interesting, when you do see them, you say to yourself, well, why didn't I see that? Because you don't have to change your perspective all that much in order to see it. But at the same time, you're not going to see it unless the peacock angel wants to invite you into his kingdom. Well, I haven't really found too many people that have had that experience of the peacock angel like I have. In fact, the only people I've known that have that experience is people that I have taken to different places and taken through a shamanic experience so they could see the peacock angel. But throughout the years, when the peacock angel appears to me as these feathers or as actual peacocks, he teaches me. I intuitively get downloaded with information. And most recently, I've received a download involving where I live, Sonoma, Arizona. For 25 years or so, since 1987, when I first started coming to Sedona, I would go into a particular vortex area here called Boynton Canyon, and I would see it covered with temples. Well, not every time was it covered with temples. The first time I went in there, back in 87, when I was having a belief crisis, I really needed a vision badly. And I was directed to go deep into the canyon and climb one of the walls of the canyon, and then I started praying, and a voice inside of me says, look in front of you, and immediately I looked in front of me, and I saw these two gigantic pillars that had been carved into the side of the canyon, kind of like Grecian pillars. And then I started looking around, and everywhere I looked, I saw temples. And they were temples that were made out of the indigenous red rock that we have here in Sonoma that we're famous for. And I even saw statues. It was like there was a whole civilization here. And at one point, I looked to the side of the canyon, and there was this gigantic symbol that jutted out from it. And then the voice inside of me said, that's a symbol of a colony of Mu. Well, Mu is the name of Lemuria. And I knew something about Lemuria. I've been studying it for years. But one thing I did know about it is it existed a long, long time ago. So I was seeing, apparently, temples that had been built by the Lemurians. But they looked totally physical. I thought they were physical until I got down off my perch and then went to try to find them. And as soon as I get within 100 feet of them, they seem to like disappear. And so that was my introduction to Sedona. And then over the next 25 years, I would go into Boynton Canyon and appear. Once in a while, I would see one or two temples. I would generally not see all of them together as I did that first time. In the last few years, I had an experience where I did see a lot of the temples, and then they disappeared, but they didn't completely disappear, and part of them was still there. So what I realized is the foundation of these temples is still here. And then most recently, this is about a year ago, I was in Boynton Canyon, and I was surrounded by this white light that came down and poured around me and within me. And as it entered me, it erased my consciousness, and I could see the temples clearer than I ever could before. I mean, this was just an amazing temple city. And then I realized that I was having a vision. I was having a vision of December 21st, 2012. And this is what many of us have the potential of experiencing at that time. That white light is the energy that will be entering the earth. And we will be the conduits for it. It will enter us. And as it enters us, it will expand our consciousness. And I believe it's going to give many of us a permanent expansion of consciousness or a semi-permanent expansion of consciousness. So many of us will be able to see these fourth dimensional temples ongoingly, and not only in Sedona, but my belief is there are many other parts of the world. Well, now one of the things that I notice when I've seen these temples is that they have this incredible peacock motif. And when you're looking at the temples, also they are surrounded, like the foliage and the greenery and the vegetation all turns into peacocks, so they're surrounded by peacocks. Well, my belief is that these temples were actually built by the peacock angel and his entourage. Now, recently I just gave an interview. I have my own radio show called Garden of the Holy Grail, and I gave an interview to a fakir, a Yazidi fakir, who spoke to me from Iraq, and the fakirs are the record keepers. And this guy was special because he could directly contact or communicate with the peacock angel. And he told me that in very, very ancient times, there were seven archangels, and they were all connected to the peacock angel. He was the king of all the angels. And they all went to the seven different continents. And on those continents, they actually built these temples, these different temples. So conceivably, these temples are, millions of years old.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. And so another thing I found out is that the Hopis, of course, as a lot of Native American traditions and tribes around here consider Boynton Canyon also to be very, very sacred. And the Hopi talk about the ancient city of Polokwane. It's in their legends. And that was the ancient red city that was built by the Kachinas, the Star People. Well, my belief is, and this is what I've been shown, is that Sedona is Polokwane, and it was built on the ruins of these ancient temples. And what I was seeing was this temple city of Polokwane. And what I've also was shown is that, of course, the king of the Kachinas, Star People, was Masao, was the main god of these cities, the main guide. And so what I was seeing, what I see out in Boynton Canyon, is the court of Masao. Now, Masao is the peacock angel, but he's also, he also takes the form of skeleton. He's the lord of the underworld. That's one of his names. And it's one of his names is Skeletor. Well, sometimes when I'm out in Boynton Canyon, all the temples also seem to have this a skull motif or a bone motif. And I've also been told that the temples and all the rocks out there, all the rocks in Boynton Canyon, they're the bones of humanity, and they hold all the wisdom and knowledge and virtually every thought, every revelation, every belief humanity's ever had is stored out there. This is a library. This is the library of humanity, of all humanity, from whatever has happened. And it's stored within the crystal, because one thing you notice when you go in Boynton Canyon, the rocks have more crystal than like any place else in Sedona and most places in the world. You can see the rock, when it turns into sand, it just glitters with this quartz crystal, totally full of this crystal.
Which means there's gold in there, too.
Well, there's everything in there.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one thing I'm sure about, is that there are portals, there are caves, there are underground temples, there's just everything out there. And my belief is that this place, this Polokwane, it's been hidden. Because it's right there, we just don't see it unless we're allowed to enter the sacred city, unless we're allowed to see it. It's been hidden. And so it's been hidden, and I believe it's been hidden for the whole third world, but in the last 6,000 years. Because one of the legends of Polokwane is that when the Hopis lived here, some of them start dabbling in black magic. And that brought on the destruction of Polokwane, which happened with the Great Flood. Well, we know that there was a flood here. You know, that's what rounded and formed a lot of the rocks. We know there was a flood here. And the Hopis say that the Third World ended with a Great Flood. Right? So, conceivably, that could have been 26,000 years ago that the flood occurred, that Polokwane was destroyed, and it's been hidden throughout the whole Fourth World. And now, as we move into the Fifth World, we need the knowledge that's in Polokwane. We need the knowledge that's in those temples, and we're able to use it in a way so that we don't destroy ourselves and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, So the upshot of all my experiences and all my inspirations is that I'm organizing a three-day event around December 21st of this year, 19th through the 21st, where we will come together and there will be lectures about the fifth world, about the new spirituality, about the new technologies, about the new civilization, and we're going to have a lot of purification rituals for ourselves and the whole planet. Vedic choir ceremony, a sweat lodge, sacred dances, and then of course on the day of December 21st, we're all going to station ourselves at the vortexes, especially Boyne Canyon, and be the conduits for that energy as it enters the Earth's grid. And of course, as it enters us, it's going to have the effect of raising our consciousness so that we can see into Palakwapi, or if not see, at least feel it and access what's there. One of my experiences out there is that you can, without going into these rock temples, access the information inside them. And I started to access an incredible amount of information one day that seems to be the whole history of the universe. So, I mean, I think virtually everything is out there. Everything's out there. So anyway, anybody that would like to join us for this event, we have a website set up, which is www.2012sedona.com, and you can go there and register.
It's linked right on the interview page. There's a link to it from the page people are listening.
Excellent, yeah. Well, it's a three-day event, and on the fourth day, after we have been to the vortexes, we come back together as the tribe of many nations or Earth tribe. But one of the things that's going to be happening at the vortexes, which I think is kind of exciting also, is that we're going to have Yuzetis here that are going to give initiation into the most ancient order of the Peacock Angels. So we're actually starting a new mystery school here that the Yuzetis are going to be our guides and the patrons of this mystery school, which seems perfect since I believe that this was one of the headquarters of the Peacock Angel in ancient times. And so there will be Yuzetis here giving initiation into that new mystery tradition. And then they seem to be ready to share these mysteries of the Peacock Angel, which they haven't in the past, for good reasons. Of course, you know, we in the West have a way of exploiting all information that comes to us. But also, if they were to share any information about the Peacock Angel, they were always risking their lives. As I mentioned, you know, all the Muslims believe that Satan. But this will be the first time in the West that this kind of knowledge is being spread. And I believe that the Peacock Angel mysteries are the sum total of the major mysteries of this planet. Because the Peacock Angel mysteries explain basically why we're here, what human evolution is all about. Totally, why you know, the whole thing from start to finish. And as I said, the Yuzeti people believe that they were the first people that were created. They were created by the Peacock Angel to be his people. And after he gave them the wisdom, then he went around the planet and gave it to the other people. But they are truly his people. And, you know, my connection to the Peacock Angel also extends to my connection to Sanat Kumara, which is the Hindu version of the Peacock Angel. And Sanat Kumara's major headquarters is in Sri Lanka, which is considered is another Garden of Eden. In fact, the whole Muslim religion believes that Sri Lanka was the Garden of Eden, the Garden of Eden. But what I see is that Sri Lanka, even 30,000 years ago, Sri Lanka was connected to ancient Lemuria. And I believe all of Lemuria was a Garden of Eden. But that was one part of Lemuria where the Garden of Eden scenario or drama took place. And if you go to Sri Lanka today, one of the second highest peak on the island is called Adam's Peak. And if you climb up there, you might want to be in good shape to do this, just to let you know. It's a heck of a climb. It's about something like 7,000 stairs, and many of them practically straight up. Be in good shape. When you get to the top, there's a big temple up there, and you go inside, and there's one long, 5-foot long footprint. And you've got Buddhist priests around there, and they're doing rituals and ceremonies and so forth and so on. But what they tell you is that this is the footprint of Adam. This is where God set Adam in the Garden of Eden. Well, obviously, very big dude, apparently, with a 5-foot long foot. Well, to complete that scenario, after Adam was set down on Adam's Peak, he climbed down the mountain, and then he traveled a little ways east until he reached a place that today is called Kataragama, which means the place of Kartikeya, or the place of Sanatamura. And apparently this is where this Garden of Eden scenario took place. And during that Garden of Eden scenario, Sanatamura took the form of the serpent on the tree. And today, if you go to his temples, you'll see that they worship him as a young boy, as a peacock, but also as a serpent, as a snake. And it was as a snake, as the serpent on the tree, that he taught Adam and Eve the mysteries. He taught them self-knowledge. The Gnostic myth is that the son of Sophia, Ildebora, was an oppressive dictator of this world and refused to tell the humans their true nature, true heritage. So she sent down her son, Sanatamura, to be the serpent on the tree to awaken them to their true nature. Well, the yogis in India say that it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for serpent on the inner tree of life, which is the serpent kundalini on the spine that rises up within us all when we're ready to know ourselves, and it awakens and opens our chakras, and thereby it reveals to us our true nature. And so Sanatamura, this being that came to brought the mysteries, he is like pure kundalini himself, pure kundalini energy. And it was from his different cords and from Sri Lanka that he actually established these lineages of kundalini masters that still exist today. You can find them in India. But he also established a lineage of kundalini masters that went west called the Mandaeans. The Mandaeans still exist today in southern Iraq. They're the great baptizers. Well, the Mandaeans, who say they originated in Sri Lanka, they when they went west, they became part of the Persian, the Sumerian, Egyptian civilizations, and finally they merged with the Essenes. And this is how the Essenes learned about baptism. Well, as part of the Essenes, the Mandaeans became known as the Nazareans, which has the prefix Nas, which means the serpents. They were the serpents. And within the Nazarene sect was born John the Baptist, Jesus, Magdalene, and John the Apostle. John the Baptist today is considered to be one of the greatest of the Mandaeans. He's considered to be their last and one of their greatest prophets.
Another name for him is Nazarene. Yeah, same thing.
Same thing, exactly. Nazarene never met, Nazareth. It means a Gnostic, basically. Jesus was called a Nazarene because he was a Gnostic. Well, the name John, that John the Baptist was named, he was called that because it was his title. It's what he was. When Gabriel, the Archangel Gabriel, appeared to his mother Elizabeth, says, "You've got to call him John because that's what he is." You see, John is an evolution of Yan, which is the name of Tanaka Mara. And Yan means gnosis. And it also has the, it also means kundalini. So John the Baptist was full of gnosis and full of the kundalini, or the Holy Spirit. And so this is why he had to be called John. Well, John founded the Johannite tradition,
mm-hmm.
in which all the Grand Masters of were known as John. That was their titular name. They were John. He was John 1, Jesus was John 2, John the Apostle was John 3, and so forth and so on. It traveled down the lineage of Johns, which, as I say, the name John means he of Gnostic power and wisdom. It was a title. So when after the Templars were created in 1118 A.D., right after that, Huda Payans was initiated in the Johannite tradition, our first Grand Master. And he was initiated by a man named Theoclete, who was John number 69. He passed it to Huda Payans, so Huda Payans became John number 70. So at that point, the whole Johannite Gnostic tradition kind of segued into the Templar tradition.
Quick question. You ever heard of John de Kampenhout?
I can't say that I have, no.
Yeah, he's apparently head of a branch of Johannites, he established his first branch of his church in a little town called Manti, Utah. And a personal friend of mine, a lady who wrote the book Cooking with Home Storage, and her name was Vicki Tate, was the first person that he ordained. But yeah, I know John de Kampenhout, and he's part of the Johannite movement. Anyway, just was wondering.
Right. Well, there's a long history to the Johannite movement. Basically, it kind of went underground. Whole 19th century, when a man named Bernard Fabre Palaprat brought it back to the surface. He reestablished the Johannite church in France. And then after he died, the Johannite tradition merged with the Universal Gnostic Church, which gradually made its way around the world until it made it to North America. And then all these different streams of Gnosticism merged together as the Apostolic Johannite Church, which today is headquartered actually in Canada. The primate, the head of it is
That's where the Kampenhout lives.
Right. Well, that's it.
Toronto.
But anyway, to get back to what I was saying, is that, the Johannite tradition is also the Holy Grail tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And Sanat Kamara is the original Fisher King. The original Fisher King is the one that fell because of ego, became a cripple. Sanat Kamara fell in a different way. Sanat Kamara is another name for him is the world soul, the king of this world. And so we are all actually part of him. And so when the human species took on the ego, he fell and we fell, we all fell together. So he is the original Fisher King, and he is the original guardian of the Holy Grail because he is the Holy Grail. He is an embodiment of that Kundalini energy. The Sufis know him today as Al-Qadir, and they say when they're ready to awaken, they will call him forth, and he'll show up and activate their Kundalini. Now, Qadir means the green man. So this being, this king of the world, was the green man. He was the savior. He was so many different things. He wore so many different hats. He was Melchizedek. Was the king of the world known as Melchizedek. Had so many different functions and so many different names and manifestations. But he was the founder of the Holy Grail tradition. And the Holy Grail is not, it never was one thing. I mean, if you study the Holy Grail tradition and the Holy Grail legends, you'll find that there were many Holy Grails. There was certainly the chalice that held the blood and sweat of Jesus. There was also there were the articles of the Passion, the cross, the Holy Shroud, the Veil of Veronica. These were all ascribed the power of a Holy Grail. You know, they all had special powers, or the Spear of Longinus. And so, what is the common denominator? What makes something a Holy Grail? It has the power. You know, it has the power, it has the frequency that if you were to drink from that chalice, or if you were to hold that implement that had the power, that power would enter you and initiate the process of alchemical unfolding. It would awaken your own kundalini. And so this was the true Holy Grail that the Templars vowed to protect. Right? They protected it within their own organization. And when a person was ready to become a Templar, there was an initiation that happened when some of that energy was transmitted into them. There was an initiation where it said in their records they had to strip down to nothing naked, and then the initiated would kiss them in different parts of the body that associated with kundalini activation, like the base of the spine and below the navel. And then he would give them a kiss over the mouth, and during which he would transmit some of his energy into them. And awaken them that way. And at the end of their initiation, they would get this cord that had been tied around the head of John the Baptist. See, the Templars acquired that head during the Fourth Crusade, and they brought it back into Europe and put it in their preceptories and had it available during initiation. It was still giving off the same kind of energy that it did when it was on the body of John, who was a great Kundalini master, you see. And it was considered, the head of John the Baptist was there. You know, main Holy Grail, that was the greatest of the Holy Grails. They owned many of them at different times. That was, but the Johannine tradition was mainly known about by the higher-ups in the Templar tradition. A lot of the lower-ranked knights thought that everyone was still Catholic, you know, and we're following that path. But no, the higher-ups were actually Johannites in the path, descended in a lineage from John the Baptist. And so the higher ups were the ones that went to the highest initiation that involved being in the same room with the head of John the Baptist and receiving energy that emanated from him. And so what we're doing in the International Order of Gnostic Templars that I'm the Grand Prior is that we are reviving that ancient tradition of the Johannine tradition. I believe that's the most important of the tradition, because it's all of them. It's the Gnostic tradition, it's the Holy Grail tradition, it's everything what the Knights Templar were truly about. And so we are Gnostics. We work towards awakening that inner energy. We work with different Holy Grail manifestations. There's actually four Grail Hallows. A rock, a chalice, a sword, and a spear that we work with. But our whole goal is to awaken that energy and open up to Gnosis. And this is one reason that we have our headquarters here in Sedona, because this is the land of Gnosis. You see, the vortex energies here will, by themselves, they can activate Kundalini. But when you put the red rock over them, the iron in the red rock accelerates the movement of that energy. It brings the energy through very quickly, right? And so the voltage is increased, and then it's amplified by the crystal in the rock. So the amperage, voltage and amperage, are both increased, and this is why you can feel this energy here very dynamically, very quickly. You don't have to wait around for very long. It's here. It's very, very powerful. And this is what we have. This is what makes this place really special. Is this red rock? And so this is why we have our main center here, main headquarters here, because that's what we're all about is Gnosis. We believe that this is the true reason that all of us have taken birth, is to know thyself, self-knowledge. And so we are in a direct line, we consider, from Sanat Kumara, which is the peacock angel from Sri Lanka. So this is, you know, another reason that we are connected to the peacock angel in our organization, is that we believe our Johannine lineage is directly descended from him on Sri Lanka. So I've been talking a lot. Do you have any questions at this point?
Well, I'll bet Mark does, because actually he was the one that sent you the query about the peacock angel.
All right, okay.
What do you think, Mark?
Well, one of the other things, and I'm not sure exactly how it's connected, so I think he's given us a pretty good overview of the peacock part. One of the other things that, in kind of looking at these, I was kind of guided to, was this thing about the Chintamani stone.
Oh, Chintamani, yeah, Chintamani.
Yeah, and I looked and I found a picture. Well, I did a search and there was a picture that was associated with it, and it was kind of interesting because it had what looks like the Om Mani Padme Hum carved on part of it, and then it has a horse and a flame on it, and these three circles in a triangular configuration. And that got my attention because those three circles in that configuration have certain meaning, especially in Mayan sense. And it will connect to Blue Otter, because those three circles in that particular configuration is the Mayan number 22. And it associates with day 22 of their Mayan Zolk'in calendar, called Nine Eek.
Wow.
Which is what Blue Otter was born on that day, Nine Eek. So it was very interesting to me, because a lot of things were kind of connecting. And also connects to a previous guest that we had, Kimberly Ruff, who works with Tibetan Hopi prophecy type of things. So I sent her a link to your writing on this, how did you say it, Chintamani stone?
Chintamani, right.
Yeah. So I think one of the things I'm wondering is how does that stone, what is the connection between it and the peacock angel?
Okay, well, that's a good question. One of the main headquarters of the peacock angel is Bala, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. That's the ancient city of the immortals that the Tibetans refer to, that they talk about. And many of them believe that that has existed since the very beginning. And it's the palace. It's where it's one of the palaces of the peacock angel. According to them, it is where the king of the world exists, and this is the place where the main portion of the Chintamani stone is supposed to exist. Right? There's a whole legend around it that it was brought to this planet by the Sirians from their star system, and initially it was given over to the King of Atlantis at the time, and eventually it made its way to Shambhala, and then over time certain parts of it were kind of, I guess, chipped off. And they were in the possession of certain conquerors, such as Genghis Khan and King Solomon, apparently. Now, what I understand from this is that one of the purposes of the Syrians was to create a one-world spirituality, one-world government here. And so this Chintamani stone has been in the possession of all those people, even conquerors, who were on this mission of creating a one world. Well, Genghis Khan wanted to conquer the world. And I think King Solomon considered himself king of the world. Well, what we know be true is that part of that stone was eventually taken out of Shambhala and ended up into the hands of the founders of the League of Nations. And this was going to be the first one world government. Well, that didn't work out, as we know. It eventually fell apart. And then it said that that stone was given over to a man named Nicholas Roark. Nicholas Roark was one of the explorers and adventurers in the East, in Tibet and Mongolia, China. So he took this this stone into Tibet, and as he was an artist, he actually drew. He made paintings of it. There's a painting that he did of the stone riding on horseback, on the back of a horse. And there's another stone of him holding a box that contains the stone. Well, long story short is that, you know, he made it into Tibet, and then the stone was he took it to Shigatse. Now, Shigatse, they say, is connected by a tunnel system to Shambhala. And although he himself did not make it to Shambhala, there were those in Shigatse. There were certain ascended masters, Master Moria, Akutumi, Waku, who then went through the tunnel system and took it back into Shambhala. And so eventually, the legend is that the king of the world will ride out of Shambhala, reconquer the world, that the rightful king of the world will be known again.
Well, you had said you want to talk a little bit about the New World Order. Have you ever heard of a woman by the name of Raylan Allen?
Raylan?
Raylan. She married Gunter Rusbacher, who was at that time the number three man at the CIA. He's dead now, but she was taken into an underground base and introduced to a man that purported to be the king of the world of all things. Saw the crown of Saint Stephen, and I sent you a link to that to take a look at. CIA conspiratorial information, but she definitely was married to Rusbacher. Rusbacher was very high up in the CIA, and she interviewed me, I guess, about a month ago. But she's had some really experiences. But I remember reading that she was introduced to this guy, and I wonder if they've usurped that also. Probably anything.
I've heard so many stories about this, you know, this king of the world. That some say that the king of the world is the king of Agartha, which is connected to Shambhala, but it's a completely underground civilization. And in fact, there's a monastery, in Buddhist monastery in Mongolia, where they'll tell you that it was 1890 that the king of the world rode out of the tunnel system into their monastery and sat in this particular chair and then gave them predictions for the next 50 years. So there's all these different stories. Well, there's also the story of this German guy, Theodor Ilion, who learned Tibetan and then colored his skin, darkened his skin, walked into Tibet, and of course didn't let it be known who he was, what he was about, but he was led to this underground settlement about 50 miles from Lhasa, where the head of it was calling himself king of the world. So you hear this, you know, so many different stories like that.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Maybe it means that you've got different beings that are tapping into this consciousness of the king of the world, or representing this king of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's more what it's all about.
Yeah, she was in an underground base under Offutt Air Force Base. Interesting. And she's the lady behind rumormillnews.com.
Right.
Interesting.
There's many ideas about the one, you know, New World Order. Of course, you know, the main one is that people think that it's the Illuminati, it's the international bankers, and they are conspiring to take over the world and blah, blah, blah. What I know about the New World Order, I trace it back to the Syrians, basically. And I think that that's what they were have been trying to do, is to create a one world order, a one world spirituality, a one world government. They have been doing it. They have been operating through the Freemasons, for example. And that was, this goal of creating one world order was passed to the Freemasons. Eventually, it really started back with a Sufi, Abdullah Maimun, hundreds of years ago, Persian Sufi who started a movement to create a one world spirituality. It didn't work out, but that his goal was picked up by this House of Wisdom, the Sufi school in Cairo, and they actually trained a lot of Sufis that then went off and created their own sects, like Hassan Isabel, who created the Assassins, and that was the goal of the Assassins also, was to create a one world government, a one world spirituality. And of course, if you got in the way of that, you know what happened. Well, an assassin would show up, and that would be the end, lights out. So the original attempts to create a one-world government was based on, terrorism, basically.
Yeah.
And then what happened was that there was a man, I say his name was Comer, and this was in the 1700s, and he studied in Cairo for a while. He was a Danish merchant, I guess. This is the legend. He studied down there, and then he went up into Germany, and then he met Adam Weishaupt. This was 5 years before the founding of the Illuminati, and he taught him of this, one world movement to create a one world spirituality. And that it was, of course, connected to the Persian tradition originally. So 5 years later, Adam Weishaupt creates the Illuminati with the goal is to create a one-world Gnostic spirituality. And, everything, so much of the spirituality is based on Persia and the Persian calendar, because this is where that movement originated, with Persia. Well, one thing led to another, and then the Illuminati created a bond with the Freemasons, and then the Freemasons picked it up. And then the Freemasons are also very much connected to the Sirius. And Sirius, of course, is their blazing star you find in the Freemasonic Lodge. When the Freemasons wanted to create a country that would be a stepping stone to creating a one-world government, a country through which they could create a one-world government and spirituality. Their goal was they chose America for that, of course, and then they chose as the beginning of America, the day of its origin, to be July 4, 1776. Well, on that day, that was the sun was exactly conjunct to Sirius, which means that if you're an astrologer and if you draw up the chart for America, you'll see that the destiny of America was completely intertwined with Sirius, the energy coming from Sirius, totally. And so the idea was to create a one-world government through America, because America would be the leader that would lead us to a fully democratic society around the world. Of course, along the way, you also had the Knights Templars that got very much involved with all this, because the Knight Templars studied with the Sufis in the Middle East, and at that time, the Sufis were some of the greatest teachers, certainly the greatest alchemists, and they were very much experts at creating mystery schools. They were able to take Greek philosophy and unite it with Egyptian mysticism and Hindu yoga and create a mystery school. And so the Templars learned many traditions from the Sufis, and then they were able to create their eclectic mystery school called the Holy Grail Mystery School, the Holy Grail Church. And part of the goal of that Holy Grail Church was also to create a one-world spirituality. And then, of course, they were destroyed in 1307, or 1314 was the end of their order, and they had to go underground. But the Illuminati picked up the thread, and the Illuminati, in fact, called themselves the Templars, the Revived Templars. And so this has also been one of our goals within the International Order of Gnostic Templars, is to complete that movement, to complete that goal of creating a one-world spirituality, or one-world Gnostic spirituality. And because, well, if you think about it, the only kind of spirituality that can unite us all together as a one-world people is Gnostic alchemical spirituality, because it's not a religion, there's no dogma. All it is using alchemy and yoga, different forms of transformational practices to evolve us to us higher our highest, you know, state of self-knowledge. So it's not a religion, it's just evolution. And so basically all religion was founded by Gnostics. In every case, it was a Gnostic that, through alchemy, through yoga, through some kind of alchemy, achieved gnosis, achieved self-knowledge, and then went back and told the disciples, and of course the disciples were like, well, this sounds great, let's make a religion out of it, right? And then we charge a lot of money, and we control people's mind, and so forth and so on. Well, you know the rest of that story, right?
Yeah.
So, so that's what you have around the world, and they became the fundamentalist religions. Well, you know, the dogma accumulated on top of dogma, and until the original teachings, you can't even see you don't even know what the original teachings are anymore. But if you cut away all the dogma, then what you're going to have is just this primal tradition, this primal alchemical Gnostic tradition, which is just simply human alchemy, human evolution. And so this is the only tradition that can unite us together as one, because it's not a religion, it's not a dogma, it's pure spirituality. And so this is what the mystery schools and the mystery traditions and initiatic societies have known, is this tradition of gnosis and alchemy that can and will unite us all together as one people.
Well, the whole, maybe we could take it even back a little bit further. The reason why you and I originally became acquainted to begin with was because Grandfather Rolling Thunder taught me about the Asaga. And if you will, you might want to take folks back through that tradition also. And folks, if you're out there and you have Cherokee lineage, you might want to listen closely to this.
Okay. Well, I know something about the Asaga tradition. We had a Cherokee man in our organization for a while, who told us about it, and apparently it's very much connected to the Siddha tradition. From what I understand, the Siddha tradition of the East, of this, uh-huh. the tradition of perfected masters of the East. But I can't say that I know a whole lot more about it than that. But he had he also taught a lot of the Siddha teaching. And the Siddha tradition is actually descended directly from Sanat Kumara. They're really the teachings of the Great White Brotherhood.
So yeah, as I recall, these were spiritual missionaries that just kind of appeared thousands and thousands of years ago all over the world. And I guess they were after speaking with you, I did read a book about a certain place in South America where their teachings were concentrated. But yeah, it was an interesting subject. Yeah, it was 5 or 6 years ago we talked about that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Have you ever had would you let Mark do your he's very good about doing your Mayan birthday readings. Would you like to have him do that for you?
Well, sure. Is this something he can do right now? Or
sure. And
all I need to do is give him the date of my birth.
Yeah, date of your birth, if you don't mind. And folks, if you'd like to call in, the number's right on the screen, or you can Skype in. There's a little S right next to the a telephone number that you call in, and maybe we could get your friend from Utah. Forget his first name.
Meredith.
Yeah. Maybe get him back. And yeah, what's your birthday? Because Mark's really good at this.
Okay, good. Well, I'm always interested in knowing more about myself. So I was born August 27th, 1955.
August 27th, 55. You got that, Mark?
August 27th, 1955?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, in the regular Mayan traditional day count, the day you were born is called 11 Khan. The day number is 11 and the Khan is the glyph. It is the 24th day of the 260 days of the calendar. The 11, the number 11 kind of relates to things having to do with testing and payment and things on the psychic and mental levels and orders. indicates things kind of a part of a life is testing to do a transmuting actually is a better word to knowledge and of knowledge. So it speaks about that. The second part, the Khan glyph, it is typically relates to things about kind of uncovering things, digging things up, fishing things out, things that are hidden.
Well, that sounds
so
like me.
That seems to fit pretty well. It's in the cycle. This 11 Khan begins on the day 1 Ix, and that's the Jaguar. So it's the Jaguar cycle. So you might want to do a little bit of research into the meaning of Jaguar in the Mayan sense.
Mm-hmm.
And you might uncover a few more other little things there by looking at that.
Well,
that could
explain why I kept for a while I kept turning into a puma.
yeah. Well, the day that the cycle starts on, these are 13-day cycles. And so your 11 Khan is the 11th day of the Jaguar cycle. So the Jaguar energy kind of permeates that entire 13 days. So it's kind of...
I've always felt the connection to Tatalapoca, you know,
mm-hmm.
or Shibalanki, the small swift Jaguar. Because it was associated with the dark twin and transformation and alchemy, right?
Right. Yeah, the underworld, too. That goes back to what we were talking about earlier with Masal.
Yeah, exactly.
And now the Khan glyph itself looks sort of like a seed being dropped into a hole in the ground. And typically it's thought of as being a corn seed. Especially by the Mayans and the Hopi, because corn is very important to both of them. And in the Mayan tradition, they also relate, there's a connection between the corn seed and the stars of the Pleiades. And the Pleiades, of course, would be connected. If you draw a line through the belt of Orion, and you just extended that line in both directions, the Pleiades would be on one side of that line, And on the other side, the opposite side, would be Sirius, which we've talked about in this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So what that is seems to be indicating to me is you may know about, you've talked about the Sirius part and the star Sirius, but you have a birth connection over some, suppose, looks like to me, to the Pleiades, which is kind of a counterbalance across the stars of Orion with the star Sirius. Now, in the Lakota star theology, all these three stars connect into the white buffalo and the buffalo constellation, because the tail of the buffalo would be Sirius, the rib or heart or backbone of the buffalo would be Orion, and then the head of the buffalo constellation would be the Pleiades. So there's another thing, another connection for you maybe to look at is with the Pleiades and the Lakota and the white buffalo thing.
Well, I can tell you that there's a very strong connection between Sanat Kumara and the Pleiades, this original king of the world, this original savior.
Mm-hmm.
One of his names is Kartikeya, which comes from Kritika, which is the Sanskrit name for the Pleiades, which means he of the Pleiades. So the Gnostic believed that Sophia was stationed in the Pleiades. She was the seven sisters united together as one. She was the goddess. In fact, they called the Pleiades the seven columns, the seven pillars of Sophia. And so the wisdom is that Sophia sent her son down from the Pleiades to uplift humanity, to inform us of our divine nature, to help to bestow upon us self-knowledge, and that was a tradition. Well, of course, the Mayans believed that that our star system, our sun, was the eighth star of the planet.
The elders also talk about the grandfathers from the stars.
Right.
And most of the time they're relating especially to the stars of the Pleiades.
Right. Well, the
and
reason I bring it up is because because this would be why the savior of humanity would come from the Pleiades, because we have such a strong connection to the Pleiades that they would send an energy down here to support our evolution and ultimately to grant us self-knowledge, self-wisdom.
Yeah. Now, they also say that they expect, some of them speak about at the time when we shift from one cycle to the next on a world cycle, that the men of wisdom will return and seem to indicate to the back to the grandfathers from the stars. Now, what I'll do next is this is going to be interesting, because this is going to connect in back you and Blue Water again.
And your friend, what's your first name, Mr. Marriott?
Jeremiah.
Jeremiah's back with us.
Hello, Jeremiah.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm very good. So, you got a question for me tonight?
Yeah, I was wondering, what would be the connection you were talking about? What would be the Sanat Kumara and the Palladians, as you were elaborating, but what is their incisive role in all
this?
You kind of came in and out on that. So the question is, what is the role of the Sanat Kumara and the Pleiades on our evolution here?
Yes, as the time ticks to 2012.
Well, as I mentioned, I do believe that their role was to bestow upon us the teachings of alchemy and yoga and the teachings that lead to the awakening of the inner kundalini power. And so they're intimately related to our evolution, and they're our brothers and sisters. They're overseeing our evolution. And I think that they are certainly on the wings, waiting and watching now. I'm sure that they have ships everywhere, and I'm sure that, you know, as fourth-dimensional beings, they're probably sitting right beside us now. But, yeah, they're waiting and watching until we can see them, basically. Moving to their, into their realm. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, that's basically has been their function, as well as Assyrians, to share with us the knowledge of evolution, the knowledge of transformation, the wisdom around alchemy. And the Christians know them as the sons of God, you know, and which was were headed by Samyasa. Samyasa is actually a Pleiadian name. Samyasa, of course, and the sons of God, they were denigrated, essentially, because as was all the forces of destruction and transformation by the patriarchal regime and patriarchal theology that's completely dualistic, saying that, well, you know, one thing's good, one thing's bad. The Christ is good, and the energies of creation are good, and the energies of destruction and anarchy are bad. And off we went, right? Living in this dualistic paradigm. So now these energies are rampant, are coming back, and we're realizing that, you know, they're not bad guys, they're good guys, because these energies of destruction and transformation are precisely the ones that destroy everything and transform everything that keeps us from knowing our divine nature. And you'll find that throughout time in India, it was always the gods and goddesses of destruction, Kali and Shiva, that were worshipped daily by the yogis, because it was precisely them that transformed and destroyed everything, including ego and toxic emotions and ideas that keep us from knowing our divine nature.
Fascinating.
And Sanat Kumara, by another name, if people are ready to hear this, is Lucifer, you know, the lord of this world. Peacock Game is, in fact, Lucifer, but Lucifer is not just Satan. Lucifer is Satan and Christ. Lucifer is actually the model of us all, right? And we are actually living his drama. His drama is to fall from grace and become the satanic energy of the ego, but then eventually become redeemed and rise up and reunite with his Christ. He has both, and which exactly is our drama. See, we on this planet are enacting the Luciferian drama. This is his planet. This is the planet of the peacock angel. This is what happens here. His drama is played out through us. That's why I'm saying this is all the mysteries are contained within the Peacock Angel mysteries. He brought them here, and we are living them out ourselves. And so, yeah, that's the home of Lucifer the Pleiades. That's the Lucifer is the son of God. He is the highest and greatest of angels, is he not? And he is the true savior. He is the light bearer that brought the teachings of alchemy and gnosis, in order that we could destroy those parts of ourselves that keep us from knowing our divine nature. He is the Kundalini energy itself. I mean, you don't have any of the immortals. No great master that ever existed could have become an immortal without that energy of destruction, that Kundalini energy working through him or her to destroy and transform all those parts of him or her that keep them from knowing their divine nature. And see, this is precisely now why, you know, the Luciferian energies are rising up in the planet. This is precisely why the dragons are becoming more popular, because the dragons came out of the Luciferian tradition, and the dragons precisely are the ones that know the secrets of destruction and transformation and alchemy. So
yeah, the whole Satan Lucifer thing, you know, it's. You know, what would Christians believe about
the devil and hell is actually Greek demonology. It's got nothing to do with what Jesus would have believed because it wasn't in the Torah. But yeah, there's so much confusion out there and about you know these subjects and you know who's who and the morning star and all that stuff. It's so it's unbelievably convoluted. Well, you mentioned semyasa. You know, Michael Horn, we've interviewed before. We're going to have him back on sometime soon. And he's the USA contact for Billy Meyer. And hope to have him on. Hey, you've touched on a lot of stuff. Hey, Mark, do you remember where you were going before Jeremiah asked his question?
Well, it was a couple of connections... Actually, back to you. His 11 con is day 24, so it's the 11th day of the Jaguar cycle. Your birth, 9 Eek, is day 22, which is day 9 of that same cycle, Jaguar cycle.
Huh.
So you guys were born in the same cycle.
Interesting.
Your family, huh?
Sort of. Now, what I'll do now is I'm going to run it past and go into another system that's more looking at not from strictly the Mayan, current Mayan calendar, but for calendar for the next cycle, looking backward at us, and give you a little bit of an idea from there. And in this one reading, I'm going to give you two time flows, a forward time flow, a backward time flow, and then where the two time flows merge or bridge. So on the forward one, you have things that would relate to intention, joy, things having to do with soul, hunabku, which is mind word for the one giver of movement and measure. So things of that nature. It's a it's associated with the color green. So they go into the heart chakra or the green part of the peacock feathers. On the backward flow, and this is moving from the next world cycle, the Hopi fifth world, back into our fourth world cycle. On that flow of time, you were you have a 10 Eek sitting in there. So 9 Eek to 10 Eek. And Eek is the symbol of a T-cross that's at Palenque. It's also in some of the Pueblos. It's at the Great Kiva at Chaco Canyon. There's a T-cross wind entrance going in there. And that's associated also with Quetzalcoatl. And the Eek glyph there, a connection with things with breath, breathing, spirit, and stuff like that. So it'd be that particular chakra energy. It's carrying, that number 10 is carrying an energy of a cult that we call the spherical tone of oneness. So a lot of energy in the last probably 6, 8, 9, 10 years, ever since around maybe 1998 or somewhere around that year, this type of energy may have been showing up in your life a little bit more strongly and kind of guiding things a little bit more. It's also carrying things with energies of transformation and change. So obviously probably a transformation and change into a unity and a oneness. Now, where these two time flows merge, they show another set of things, how it's kind of the bridge or how you get from one world cycle to another. And it has, speaking of a lot of things about loyalty, heart, good virtues, liberation of things. And again, it has showing some of that Eek energy again with the breath, spirit, prayer, and stuff like that. So, and it's actually in that particular cycle of an Eek cycle. So a lot of Eek energy there, and that's where you're connecting with Blue Otter here with his birth of 9 Eek. So that That seems to be a pretty powerful connection. We've seen another guest, too, on the show. A lot of them seem to be connecting into his Eek energy. So, and so that's basically it in a nutshell. So it sounds pretty much exactly like what you're doing.
Yeah, Mark's really good at this. That's why we call him the Badger, because he really knows how to dig for this stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm really excited. I hope your hope your gathering really goes well and you get good participation. And I admire what you're doing, Mark and Sir Mark.
Okay, so you guys are certainly welcome and invited to come to this. You got any plans on that day or those days?
No, I sure don't. I just I doubt I could get away, you know, from Tennessee to get there. Mark's closer than Mark's up in north of Denver. He might be able to make it down. He's not too far from you.
Yeah, you're not very far away, Mark. Well, why don't you take a look at our website for the that conference, www.2012sedona.com, and see what you think. I'm biased, I'm prejudiced, I admit it, but I think it's just going to be just an amazing, this is going to be the place to be. It's going to be just an amazing, amazing time here.
Oh, yeah.
Accelerated. And one thing I do believe about Sedona is it's the root chakra of planet Earth. They often speak about Mount Kailas as being the crown chakra. Well, you know, if you were to take Mount Kailas and drill a hole through the Earth, from there, you'd come out right about this place, Sedona, Arizona. Which means that Kailash is the crown, and then you've got five other chakras in the center of the earth, and then you've got us here, the root chakra in Sedona. And it makes sense. If you look around, it's all red, which is the color of the root chakra, and the root chakra is the home of Kundalini. And I would say definitely that is true here. And I think that, and so during December 21st, 2012, there's going to be acceleration of that Kundalini energy moving around the planet as we transform into the next dimension. And also, I believe that a lot of the information that is encoded in these temples that I see is wisdom related to alchemy and transformation, Kundalini activation. And so it's all right here in the root chakra. And this certainly is the land of the serpent. It's the land of transformation. And people like myself come here because we're transforming all the time. Scorpios. More Scorpios here probably than anybody else on the planet.
Really?
Because that's the name of the game for them in this lifetime. It's transform, transform, transform.
Yeah, my son's a Scorpio. He's searching. And
I know.
Then he should be here on December 21st.
by any chance, do you know Deirdre Madsen from ShangriLaSedona.com? She's a close friend and has been for quite a while. She lives in Sedona.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And
get her in touch with me or whatever. Well,
I'm sure she knows who you are.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Well,
so anyway, you're all invited here, and we just want to get everybody here. We want to get representatives from all tribes, all nations, all colors, all sects, all religions, you name it. We'd like to get everyone represented here.
At the end,
together is a tribe of all nations.
Yeah, Mark Badger, you and Sir Mark haven't talked about Grandfather Martin. I guess you're both pretty thick.
Right, Grandfather Martin. Well, he, I went up to Hopi Reservation, invited him down for that time period, but he, apparently he's got major hip problems, so he doesn't get around too much, and he doesn't hear very well at all. He's practically deaf. as well.
Yeah.
But he has actually copies of the Fire Clan tablets through hieroglyph symbology described, you know, this time now and the time we're moving into. So he explained these to me and said that I could represent him at the conference and then inform people what this symbology is. And of course, the Fire Clan is a clan of Mistel, is the clan of Sanat Kumra, is the clan of the Peacock Angel. So, you know, it makes sense that I would be led to Grandfather Martin since he represents the Fire Clan on the planet these days. But we want to get as many Hopis involved as we can, because, as I said, I believe this is truly the Polokwakwe, the ancient Hopi city. It's really, it's their tradition, it's their city. And so that is our goal, to get as many as we can involved. Of course, unfortunately, they won't be able to be here on the day of December 21st, because that's a special day for them and their tribe, and they need to be on the reservation to do special ceremony.
Yeah, they're going to be in their Soil ceremony.
Yeah, so they can be here for the 19th and 20th, but not the 21st. So, I'm really anxious to have create a meeting between the Hopis and the Azedis, because I believe, as I said, the Hopi Masao is the Azedi Peacock Angel.
How do you spell that, Sir Mark? Azedi.
Azedi, it's Y-E-Z-I-D-I. Yazidi, it's pronounced.
Z-D. Right, gotcha.
I created a website for the Yazidi called YazidiTruth.org. In order to have a website where you can get actual information about the Yazidis, who they are, and the Peacock Angel, because otherwise, if you go to another website, you're invariably you're going to get this bogus information about the Peacock Angel being, you know, Satan. So if you want real information, go to YazidiTruth.org.
And how do you spell that domain name once more?
Yazidi Truth. You just run it together as one word, YazidiTruth.org.
And spell Yazidi one more time. I'm sorry.
Y-E-Z-I-D-I.
T-R-U-T-H .com. Right. Okay, and I'll get a link to that up. It comes up as, I must be spelling it wrong, Y-E-Z-I-D-I Truth. .com
I'm sorry, it's .org.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay, I'll get a link from this interview up on there. And
I wrote out a complete explanation about the Peacock Angel on that website. So if you go there, you'll recognize some of his names, because he's actually in all different traditions, because he's the original teacher of all these traditions, and so he was the Enki, he was the Dionysus, he was the Al-Qadir, he was the Sanat Kumara, he was the Peacock Angel, he was the El-Mekizeldek. You can find him in all these different traditions around the world. And so go there and read all about him, and you'll be able to identify and relate to some of his titles in different traditions.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to it.
And so yep. But the Azedis say that I actually gave an interview on my radio show to Kamal Kasu, who Azedi Fakir, and he said that in the days to come, it's going to become clear again that the Peacock Angel is the king of the world. He is and was and always has been. And so apparently people are also going to be able to have visions like I have, see these temples and see the peacocks everywhere.
Wonderful. And is there a...
And so at that point, it's going to become clear also, you know, that the Peacock Angel has been in all these different traditions, but under a different name.
And what's the... where do you do your radio show from?
I do it at BBS Radio.
Oh, BBS? Okay. Okay. Sounds good.
It's called Guardians of the Holy Grail. Now, people, if people want to hear the archived show that I've done, and they don't want to have to take out a subscription for BBS Radio, they can go to the website of our Templar Order, which is www.gnostictemplar.org, and all the archived interviews that I've done the last 2-3 years are there to them for free.
Excellent.
Save yourself some money.
Excellent.
And you can listen to that interview I just recently did with the Teddy Fakir. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, I often wonder why the Kurds were getting such a raw deal. I mean, this has been going on forever. The Kurds have been getting dumped on, and way before Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
I mean, this goes back long time.
Well, the don't ever call the Yazidi a Kurd.
Gotcha.
But then you value your life.
Because
the Kurds have all
they're Kurdish.
Are all Muslims for one thing.
Oh, I got you.
Kurds originally were all Yazidis.
Gotcha.
But over the years, they've been forced to convert to Islam in order to save their necks, basically.
Gotcha. Okay. So they're Kurdish-speaking people.
Yeah.
Wow, half a million or more.
Well, there's about a half a million left of Yazidis, but I've been told that 20 million or so have been murdered over the years. But anyway, I'd like to get back just briefly to the Peacock Angel. You know, the idea that we all left Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve left the Garden of Eden. Humanity left the Garden of Eden. But the Garden of Eden is still there, and we can return to it when we're ready. I believe that the Garden of Eden was covered with peacock feathers, because that is what happens when you move into that dimension where we believe the Garden of Eden exists. You're surrounded by peacock feathers. And let me tell you, you cannot find a more glorious environment to be in than one that is where all you see is peacock feathers, because the color, imagine the color of peacock feathers is so incredibly beautiful. Now, it's like the most beautiful bird, the most beautiful thing on the planet. And I believe that that is Garden of Eden. When we move into it or move back to it, that's when we're really going to see him everywhere, as the peacock, as the peacock angel, everywhere. So that's what's waiting for us in the next dimension.
Well, I think it's the next few months are going to bring a lot of surprises. I think everybody's just waiting with bated breath. And
I think that the Venus transit has really catalyzed the movement that is going to culminate on December 21st. I think. But it was the beginning of opening to Gnostic awareness, for one thing, you know, the opening the heart. And there's three main centers of we Gnostics work on opening up is the heart, because the heart is the seat of the spirit. When you're in your heart, you know yourself as spirit. That's the highest gnosis. Then there's the third eye, which is our antenna that we receive high, you know, Gnostic wisdom from around the universe. And then finally the root chakra, which is the home of Kundalini, and once that's activated, it moves up and opens up the other two chakras. So the Gnostic path, these are three main chakras that open up. So I think that the Venus transit corresponds for many of us, for the at least a semi awakening of the heart chakra and connection to the inner spirit and the I am. I am that. I am that. I am within the heart chakra. But I think that it will. A lot of it will culminate on December 21st. But what we have, what we're experiencing right now is basically what I call the left hand spiral. You could say that from the center of the Milky Way galaxy, the Hunuku, from the beginning of time, was were two interlocking snakes, if you will, that moved out as energy, just like the Caduceus, right? So you had kind of the natives talked about the one primal serpent that created this universe out of its own self, out of its own energy, And it did that by shooting out, emanating these serpents, these dual serpents coming together, left and right spirals, Caduceus. Those are the two parts of the primal serpent. And in any time in evolution of the galaxy, one of those spirals is going to be predominant over the other. During creation cycles, it's going to be the right-hand spiral that moves down into creation and densifies and crystallizes the life force into physical form. And then during the end of cycles, during the time of the transformation, then the left-hand spiral is ascended. And that returns everything back to pure energy, turns back everything back to the spirit. And this has become really activated as we've aligned with the center of the galaxy, which is Hunuku. And what that has done is it's activated the left-hand spiral within all of us. And all of us are microcosmic images of the macrocosmic universe. And so we have these dual interlocking snakes within us, well, certainly as the DNA, but throughout our body, energy is moving in these spirals. And right now what's being activated is this Kundalini energy, which is a left-hand spiral within all of us. And this is what's bringing up the stuff within us to be released so that we can take on the new energies of the new era of the fifth world. And these will start to arrive, I believe, on December 21st, 2012. But this is why this left-hand spiral is accelerating everything that's happening in our lives, but it's also bringing up all the stuff, all the traumas, all the memories, everything that we need to release so that we can raise our consciousness and accept the new frequencies. So this is the time of the transformation. This is the time of what I call the left-hand spiral. And one thing I want to say about the left-hand spiral that's interesting is that one of the prophecies of the Hopis is that the Earth, which is moved in a clockwise direction in a right-hand spiral, eventually will shift. It will be like a polar shift, and it will move in a counterclockwise direction in the left-hand spiral. And what this represents is that evolution will then occur faster and quicker on the planet, because the left-hand spiral is the spiral of evolution. It raises up and returns to spirit, and the right-hand spiral, of course, then takes you down into matter.
It pulls energy up out of the earth, and you know the Hopi and the Cherokee are the only, and the Aztec are the only natives that dance counterclockwise. Everybody else dances clockwise. And anciently, the teaching was if you dance clockwise, you know, it was akin to witchcraft. But the original ghost dance was a right hand spiral. And I don't know whether you knew that or not, but in the 1975 movie Billy Jack, the original a descendant of Wovoka, son-in-law Andy Vidovich, taught the dance, and a lot of people think it's a round dance, but it's actually a spiral. You can go to YouTube and look up original ghost dance and see a 2.5-minute clip that I took right out of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Of course, people are scared of the counterclockwise dance because it evokes what? The energy of Lucifer, the Lord of Destruction, the Lord of Evil. But it's that energy of destruction that is the energy of transformation, the energy of alchemy, the energy that takes you to a higher level of consciousness.
Well, this is a spiral. They're moving counterclockwise, but they're if you imagine a spiral, you know, with the end moving counterclockwise and coming around into the center, that's what the dance looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But it moves counterclockwise.
And Blue Otter, you know the calendar stone or the Aztec sunstone?
Uh-huh.
If you look at the glyphs there that are around the five world ages, there's a circle ring of the 20 glyphs around that, and they are also moving in the counterclockwise direction.
Uh-huh.
I taught a little seminar about the left and right hand spiral, and then at the end of the seminar, someone came up to me with some photographs of how ice has been forming over the winter, and in a number of these photographs, it's forming in a left hand spiral, creating a perfect left hand spiral. So throughout nature, we're all under the effect, forms of nature under the effect of the left-hand spiral as we're all evolving together.
Well, you're a gentleman and a scholar. We really appreciate you.
Thanks for giving me a chance to run my mouth a little bit.
Oh, anytime. Anytime you ever want to come on and make an announcement, or if you want to have a conference call with your people, we can do that. I think the favorite shot on your Facebook page is when you're buried up to the neck. That's great.
Right. What that was all about, actually, which it kind of relates to what we're talking about, the Jaguar tradition. I was actually, that was initiation into the Jaguar Knights. Actually.
Really?
Yeah. It was a death, kind of a death and rebirth. You notice in the picture there's roses around my head. Well, you know, that's what you put on the grave, so, right? That's what you put the grave of someone who's died. And that was the idea. I purchased the roses on the way to the spot where we did the ritual, and then they had me dig my own grave. And then I stripped down to, I think I had a bathing suit on or my underwear or whatever. Got in there, and then they totally covered me up to my neck. Couldn't budge, you know, and I think I was there about 4 hours. The worst part of it is I was shaking a lot because the ground was cold. It was quite cold. Sitting was shaking, and I was doing a lot of pranayama and trying to stay warm. But anyway, I got through it, and then afterwards we did a 1 to 2 hour long sweat lodge.
Well, there's a.
It was a bit grueling. It was a bit grueling, but I'm glad I did it. And then I did a little initiation after that at Teotihuacan, where the Jaguar Knights and Eagle Knights did their ceremonial dances.
There's when I interviewed.
What's that?
When I interviewed Jaime O. Perez. And he used to have a website where he talked about the prophecy of the return to the seat of the jaguar. And it goes like this: when Mother Earth and Creator wishes we will enter the lands to the south and travel to the Yucatan Peninsula, this journey of the awakening has been foretold by many cultures around the world and now cannot be ended. The journey to the south is to make preparation for the fourth and final journey, which will take us full circle around our Mother Earth, gathering her children, that will complete the vision. We will awaken a place there in the land of the jaguar for the children from the four directions to come and gather again as we did once, and we will do it again.
Hmm.
And you know, even the Mormons have a fascination with the Yucatan Peninsula. There's a whole subculture Fundamental Mormonism about the Indian prophet, because it was written into the Book of Mormon, 2 Nephi chapter 3. And Joseph Smith was looking for this character. He was headed to the Rocky Mountains when he was called back and murdered shortly thereafter. But they originally were programmed to go look for a future Indian seer. And the Yucatan and all the thousands of people that have been going down there on pilgrimages, and all the work that you're doing, I just find it fascinating. See, that's how I got into all this, was I was in the LDS Church for several years, graduated from BYU, and I read myself out by 85, and graduated from, joined in 77. That's how I found my way into this whole thing. Was through that tradition.
Go ahead.
Well, listen, appreciate
you. We're trying to do our part in the revival of the Jaguar Knight tradition. Actually, in the books that I've written, I talk about in ancient times there was this one world dragon culture all around the planet, and all the kings, priest kings, were called dragons. All the head of the mystery schools were
right.
Because they had both the dragon, they were masters of the dragon force, but they're also masters of the dragon wisdom, which is hypnosis. And this also includes the knights. The knights were masters of the force, just like the Jedi knights.
The Cherokee remember that there were dragons flying around.
They definitely
were. The traditional Cherokees remember that there were dragons in the skies before the white men got here. And
there actually were Jedi knights, but they weren't Jedi. There was actually Jedi, is the right pronunciation.
Jedi.
They come from Egypt.
Faithful.
Yeah. Djedhi was the right spelling. Of course, which is shortened to Jedi, but it was Jedi. And Dj actually means serpent. That was the name of the serpent. So these were the knights that were masters of the serpent force.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have now founded the Jedi Templar Corps as part of the Master World of Gnostic Templars, and we actually have a Facebook page. You can check it out on a Facebook group. But we believe we are creating the knighthood of the fifth world through which we are going to teach our knights about mastery of the Force. And we're going to make them. We actually have, besides myself, we have a Navy SEAL trainer that's going to be training our knights in all kinds of martial arts and defense techniques, and also survival techniques. So, and eventually, what we want to create is a knight, something like Luke Skywalker. You can put them on any planet, any dimension, and they're going to be okay. They have the tools in order to survive. And so this is the new knighthood. We believe that this is the old knighthood as well. That the true knighthood has been lost. Now all you have is the knights today are what Elton John and Mick Jagger.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, in Hebrew, Yedida means the faithful ones, and they are restoring their martial art. A friend of mine who I interviewed back in 2004, Rabbi Michael Baron, is involved in that, and it's quite a tradition. I'll send you a link to. So you can take a look in their dojo. They work with the equivalent of a Chinese, I think it's called I can't remember the name of their sword. Very flexible. Very flexible sword. And I'll send you a link to that.
Okay. Yeah, I think that you're going to find there's a number of people out there and a number of different traditions that are going to be working to revive the original and the true tradition. Because, you know, We're always talking about the divine feminine, right? How it needs to be revived and how precious that is. We don't talk a lot about the divine masculine, and that needs to be revived as well. To me, the divine masculine is demonstrated by a knight that has courage, that has true integrity, that has true determination, that wants to protect those weaker than him or her, that wants to serve the higher powers, the king of the universe. And so I think it's just as valid, it's important to revive the divine masculine as it is the divine feminine. This is what we intend to do through the Jedi Temple Corps.
Yeah, it's. I mentioned. I had to look it up. It's called the Abir Warrior Arts, and it's ABIR, and you can go to abirwarriorarts.com, or you can. There's lots of video up on YouTube, and one of the fellows that you'll see in those videos is my friend Mikhail, and
It's quite something. It's based on their kata is based on the Hebrew alphabet, and you simply wouldn't believe some of the moves these guys are doing. And yeah, martial arts have really taken off in Israel, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. But these arts, to give you an example, the King of Jordan, even though he was a Muslim, employed Jews. These were Sephardic Jews that were trained, going back centuries in this art. And now you want to take a look at it. It's quite spectacular. I just sent you a link to that. Well, that's great. I'm glad to hear you're covering the waterfront there with teaching people. It's important to teach people how to defend themselves.
Well, our patrons, Sanat Kumarai, if you see images of him on the internet as Mordigan, as Kartikeya, he in some images he's got all kinds of weapons. He's the master of weaponry. Or you'll see he just holds the spear. But he's the original warrior, right? He brought the Gnostic warrior tradition to this planet. So we're reviving it. We have the ancient academy of noble Gnostic knights, through which we're going to be teaching the Jedi Templar core tradition. But a Gnostic knight, although he or she may use physical weapons, their real weapons are internal. Like the sword is the internal weapon that represents discrimination. The spear actually represents Gnosis, right? The shaft of the spear, it represents the spine that Kundalini runs up. The blade represents the third eye that the Kundalini opens up, so to reveal Gnostic awareness to the Gnostic warrior and thereby give them guidance. And so the greatest of all weapons for a Gnostic warrior is his own inner spirit. And so there's a big difference between a warrior that uses physical weaponry, although we will use some, but big difference between them and a Gnostic warrior whose main weapons are internal weapons.
Well, I got just enough time to play the outro music, and really appreciate you. And anytime you want to get back on here, you just let us know, okay?
Okay, well, Bluada, thank you very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure and a joy.
You
bet. And once again, I'd like to invite everyone to come to our event on December 19th through 21st, and please go to our website and read all about it, www.2012sedona.com. So, see you all then. See you all here.
And I'll send you the HTML so you can put this interview anywhere you want on your website.
I also want to mention one more thing.
Sure.
Some of these teachings of the Peacock Angel and so forth, some of the real secret teachings, I will be teaching them. There's a conference called the Pythagoras Conference. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's going to be happening October 10th to the 14th. And it's going to be in Elizabeth, Indiana, which is right across the river from Louisville, Kentucky. There's going to be a lot of great speakers there. And if you want to learn about it and register, you can go to Pythagoras Conference Global.